Hello. Thanks for coming. There were 175 people signed up for this session, but I guess they got stuck at the expo. Thank you very much for showing up anyway. How much time do you spend debugging? I mean, you're software developers, hopefully. What part of your time do you spend debugging? 20%, 50%, 95%, too much, yeah, maybe. So hopefully in the next hour, I'll be able to show you how you can improve your debugging experience even by just a little. And even if we do just a little improve to improve your debugging experience, it's going to be a lot if you spend a lot of time debugging. But first things first, my name is Sasha. I'm the CTO of an Israeli company called Sela Group. We have branches all around the world. I'm also a Microsoft MVP, and I do a lot of Azure as well. But today we're going to talk about debugging, which is one of my favorite topics, and specifically IntelliTrace, which is this magical tool built into Visual Studio that you can use to improve your debugging experience, both in Visual Studio and in production. And that's something fewer people are aware of, and we're going to see exactly how to accomplish this. I also am obligated to remind you that we have the Ask the Experts event right after this talk at 6:30. Whole 5 had the meals, and you're very welcome to catch me there as well. I'm going to spend the next couple of hours before flying home at the Ask the Experts area. So, like I said, IntelliTrace is this magical thing that aids you with your debugging experience. And the clicker should be working. There we go. IntelliTrace is this magical thing that is supposed to help you with your debugging experience, and it's part of Visual Studio Ultimate. And I just had to get it out right now, up front, so you know what you're signing up for. It is an Ultimate feature. You do need an Ultimate license. The good news, and the reason you don't have to leave right now if you don't have an Ultimate license, is that, oh, so you're not getting up. And the reason you don't have to leave right now if you don't have an Ultimate license is that you can collect IntelliTrace information, IntelliTrace logs, without a Visual Studio license, without Visual Studio even in the area, even being installed. And then to analyze these traces, you do need Visual Studio. So theoretically, you could have this one Visual Studio PC in your whole organization, and you would use it to analyze IntelliTrace information that you collect across thousands of machines in the cloud, in your data center, in your QA environment. So you don't need a Visual Studio license for every box, and that's really important to say upfront. But it is an Ultimate feature. So having said that, there are two major experiences with IntelliTrace, and I'm going to show you them in just a couple of minutes. One is live debugging, so to speak, where you use Visual Studio, hit F5, you see a bunch of information that takes you back historically in time. They call it historical debugging. It shows you what was happening in your application before the current point where you stopped your debugger. And when you set breakpoints, you can go back to previous breakpoints, you could go back to exception events. We're going to see a few examples of that. It's really, really cool. If you haven't used it before, it's going to look like magic. You can also use IntelliTrace, like I said, in the production environment. You can install a really tiny collector, which is really doesn't need an install. It's just a bunch of files that you copy over, and you collect information in production, copy it over to your development machine, open it, and you gain the execution history of an application running in production. So I'm promising you a lot. It's supposed to help you debug stuff. So why don't we take a look at a couple of demos? So just switching over to my demo machine here. I've got this little application, and we're going to need to zoom in a lot because it has really tiny fonts like any good enterprise application. It's a WinForms app for managing a social club. And so I log in. And then there are two screens here for registering new members and for searching existing members. So we're going to add a new member. Let's say Sasha. Date of birth, let's leave it at it. Suppose I am an engineer and I'm married, married really, and my health status is good, I guess. Okay, I hit register over here and it's registering, and there's some database work happening in the background, and registration was successful. Now I switch over to my Search or Manage Members tab just to verify, and I hit Get All, and I get two records. One is me, and the other is a phantom record that says unknown. And it's in fact in an invalid state. If I click this thing, I get an error message, parameters are invalid, blah, blah, blah. So how would you debug this? Say it's your code, or even worse, someone else's code. How do you debug it? You have the code right there in Visual Studio. What do you do? What's that? Okay, but like you've just built this thing and it's not working. What do you do conceptually right now? What do you do in Visual Studio to debug this? You set breakpoints, right? I guess you set breakpoints. So let's try this approach. There's also another little bug in this application where by closing the main window, it doesn't actually close. So I'm gonna kill it first, and then. Here's the first breakpoint we're going to set in the register method. What happens when we register a new user? So let's F5 this. Okay, and it's running. And I'm going to log in again, just skipping this part real quick. And then we sign in, engineer, married, decent health. I click register. Takes me to the breakpoint. We're on the right track. And so I hit F10 and another F10, and this looks interesting. Register member. What does it do? Let's see. Register member. Okay, so it creates a club member object. Seems reasonable. It checks if everything's valid, and it seems to be valid. It assigns the properties from the UI, the name, date of birth, occupation, health status, number of children, expiration date. Everything's fine. And then it goes ahead and creates an object in the database. And I'm not even gonna F11, I'm not gonna step into this thing because it's pretty evident that we're only creating one record here. And so I'm gonna hit F10 and it's loading symbols, but the record should be there momentarily. Okay, and coming up with a few first chance exceptions in the background, there we go. Success. Was it successful? Seems successful. Success is true. Okay, what's next? Registration successful. Reset the screen. No exceptions. And we're out of the method. That's it? Okay, looks fine. Let's go to the Get All button and see if there's some nasty logic in the retrieval, maybe. So I hit Get All, and it takes me to a method called Refresh Click. Okay. What does it do? Let's see. Club member service get all. Okay. Then let's take a look at this data object over here. I'm just going to bring up a quick watch over this thing. And it's a data table. Remember that? Data sets, data tables, this thing of the previous decade. Anyway, it's got a property called rows. Someone down over here, rows, and there's two rows. So at some point between inserting the data into the database and retrieving it from the database, there was this phantom record inserted. Now, of course, we could maybe go to the database side now. Maybe there's a trigger that creates another record. Maybe there's a storage procedure that runs in the background every 5 seconds and duplicates the record incorrectly, right? But the breakpoints approach, and that's what I'm trying to tell you here, the breakpoints approach didn't help a lot. Didn't help at all, really. So we've inserted this one record, and we have two records in the database. And this is just one case where IntelliTrace might be helpful. So let's take a look at the initial IntelliTrace experience if you haven't seen it before. Over here on the right, there is an IntelliTrace window, which I'm going to pin to the right. And currently, it's showing, as you can see over here, it's showing all the interesting events that occurred during the execution of this program under the debugger. And so it's got stuff like debugger steps. Every step I take in the debugger is recorded here. And it's got stuff like breakpoints somewhere over here, going back a lot. There should be, that's another step recorded event, but there should be a breakpoint hit event. So whenever I hit a breakpoint, that's also recorded. And along the way, you might have noticed, it's also recording exceptions, it's recording ADO.NET queries, it's recording gestures, like clicking stuff. So for instance, you can see a gesture where I clicked the register button. And this really helps you orient yourself in the trace. What are we looking for right now? So let's take a look at the area around this clicked gesture and just move forward a little bit. And here, we can see some ADO.NET queries. Select count star, select count star, drop database. Sounds good. Some more select count stars. And I'm looking for insert statements, really. So gradually, we're getting there. There is an insert statement somewhere in this beautiful application. Right over here, we've got an insert. Insert into the club members table. And let's take a look at the details. We have the full query text, even though it was executed in the past. And I mean, it looks okay. There is even the collection string over there. And it all looks fine. Except if we scroll down a little, you can see another insert statement. And that other insert statement has null values for a lot of the columns. Now, let me just try and... that's the first insert statement, actually. Scrolled too far away. Okay, so there's one and there's two. And they're both in a method called create, which creates a club member using a DB context. And at this point, we could probably set a breakpoint over here to see why it's being called twice from two different places, maybe. But we don't need to set breakpoints anymore, because each of those events has an associated call stack. We know how we got there. We know exactly how we got there. IntelliTrace records this information. And so if I just, let me just run this thing over again quickly so we don't have so much garbage lying around in the trace. Okay, so I'm going to insert Sasha again. He's an engineer. He's married. He has good health. Register. We hit the breakpoint. I hit a 5. And it's inserting stuff into the database. And finally, I'm going to break into the app. As soon as I break, we get the IntelliTrace information again. And now, we can see the two insert queries real clean, nothing in between. So the first insert operation, if we look at the call stack, for that operation, forgot to change the font size here. We got to this insert operation from the register click method in our UI. That's where I set the breakpoint previously. How did we get to the second insert statement? That's more interesting. So I'm just going to skip this thing down. Oh, it's really hard to navigate like that. And okay. So here's the event we're looking for. That's the second insert statement. And here's the call stack for that second insert statement. And what do you know? It's a different method. This one is called button register mouse click. And that calls into the same call stack, which eventually inserts a record into the database. If I double click that thing, we can see that indeed there is a method called button register mouse click. And there is also a method called register click. And both methods are creating a database object. And both methods are wired up to that same button. So they're both event handlers for the same button. And I know it's a stupid bug, But I've written my share of those bugs, and I hope you have seen some of those as well. And it can be really, really annoying to figure out, because it's not obvious why you have two event handlers, that the fact that you even have two event handlers, and that they're both being invoked to create this phantom record in your database. And by using the breakpoints approach, we could have spent a lot of time on this problem. Let me show you another example. So I'm just going to quit this thing over here and switch over to another project. This one is a web application. So I'm going to run it first without a debugger attached. And this one is a simple contact manager application, which is supposed to show you your contacts and let you add some new contacts as well. So it's loading my contacts right now. And here are some of my friends from Jerusalem and from Washington State. So let's insert a new one, Dave. Well, it was auto-completing something else. And Dave's email would be dave@dave.com. And we don't really need all the other details here. And so I hit save, and we got Dave show up. Looks fine. Now, I do have a little issue in this application, whereas if I click save again, I get another Dave. But that might be reasonable, really. Maybe I want to duplicate contacts named Dave. This one isn't a phantom record. It's one I've actually inserted, right? But now maybe I want to delete these Daves and fill in some more details. So I remove the first Dave, and he goes away. And then I remove the second Dave, and he just won't go away. And I click remove, and I click remove, and I click remove, and Dave doesn't go away. What do you say? How do we debug this? We set breakpoints, I guess, somewhere. Where do we set breakpoints? So first, yes? Yeah. So we first need to figure out what this remove button is doing. So let me just use the Chrome Developer Tools real quick. I'm opening the Inspect Element pane. And let me just bring this up a little. So here's the remove contact button. And it's calling a method on the scope behind called remove contact. So let me just quickly switch over there. Here's the remove contact method. Some JavaScript that's being invoked whenever you click the remove button. And it seems to be issuing an AJAX call to the server with a delete HTTP verb. So it probably is a good idea to go over to the server right now and look for the corresponding maybe controller. It's a web API application, or maybe an MVC controller. Anyway, look up the controller that handles contacts and look for the delete method on that controller. So let me just go down there. Here's my Visual Studio. And we are in a class called Contact Manager, Contact Controller. And here's the delete method. And by simple code inspection, there isn't anything particularly nasty around here. It retrieves the record from the data repository, from the database, and then it deletes it, right? So nothing particularly interesting happening here. So let's F5 this. And we get another page with our contacts, loading up a little more slowly this time because we have Visual Studio loading up symbols. And so I'm going to expect this breakpoint to be hit, and we'll be able to inspect the ID and see what's going on in our repository. So just a few more seconds while the symbols are being loaded. Nothing like some symbols for breakfast. Okay. Coming up, I swear, some symbols now. Right. I could disable symbol loading for the meantime, but there we go. Loading some more symbols now. You love Visual Studio, don't you? You use it every day. You're used to it. Right. And the funny thing is, of course, all of these symbols are cached because I've done this demo like 5 times before the session, and so it's just loading them from disk. In any case, some more symbols now. Okay, I'm going to cancel this. And there we go, contact manager. I'm not really going to debug into these frameworks anyway. And we're going to be inserting Dave dave@dave.com. And yeah, my contacts are here. Save once, save twice. Now, let's remove. So I'm trying to remove Dave. And slowly but surely, we hit the breakpoint. Let's take a look at the parameters. Ooh, ID equals 0. Does not look very good. And how about the object itself? So var deleted, deleted is equal to null. And then we're not really deleting anything. We're throwing an exception. And that exception is just being swallowed because the browser doesn't display it. And so we're not deleting anything. But have we really progressed towards the root cause? We don't know why the ID is 0, because that seems to be the problem. Shouldn't be 0, but it is 0. Again, we don't really know. And to figure it out, we'd have to go to the insert method, which inserts this contact, and see if it was able to insert, and it, if it erroneously returned an ID of 0 to the client, and maybe look at the database state at this point. So basically, we're going to restart the whole session. But no, we're not going to restart the whole session. We're going to look at IntelliTrace again. So I opened the IntelliTrace events view. And let's take a look at some of the records we have. So I think it's like right in your face, basically. Over here, there is an exception being thrown right around the post which should have inserted a new contact. And it says you cannot have two contacts with the same email. But this exception is thrown right over here, and this exception is then caught right over here. So my guess at this point is that the server really did not insert two records, but the exception was sort of swept under the covers, under the rug, and so we the client doesn't know that the insert failed, possibly. But in any case, we can click those events and see exactly how we got there. So take a look at the code, please. We're trying to insert a new contact right over here in the post contact method. And the first thing we do is check if we already have a contact with the same email address. And if we do have a contact with the same email address, we throw an exception. But then we catch that exception, and there is this nasty comment down there that says catch DB concurrency exceptions. But this is not a DB concurrency exception. It's a duplicate contact whatever thing exception. But we're swallowing this. The client doesn't know. The client displays a phantom record, which we can't delete, of course, because it doesn't have a valid ID. So again, the sort of interaction against the database and against exceptions that are being thrown and the specific event when the exception is being thrown is something IntelliTrace can be helpful with. But let me show you a final example before we move on to other things you can do with IntelliTrace. I want to show you an example with a failing unit test. So I have this project over here. This time it's a class library which implements a compiler for this fictional language called Jack. And so the project is called Jack Compiler. And it's got one unit test. We've just gotten started, and that unit test is failing, as you can see on the left. And if I click that unit test, we get the detailed error message, of course. Visual Studio unit testing is wonderful. And what it says is that the compilation exception was thrown, expected, semicolon. Well, we're compiling something, so expected semicolon is reasonable. And if we look at the call stack, it looks pretty bad. Parse class, parse subdecals, parse subdecal, parse subbody, parse statements, parse statement. So there's this really big and nasty call stack over there. But the interesting question is, so suppose we're compiling this source code, which does not have a semicolon somewhere. Where does it not have a semicolon? Does not say. The exception message does not say, the stack trace obviously does not say, and so at this point we're sort of relegated to looking for missing semicolons over the whole source code that was used in this compilation example. And if there's 1,000 lines, it's going to be pretty bad. So again, what would you do? How would you figure out which line it's failing to compile? I agree with your silence because from the test results, from the test output anyway, there is no way of knowing. So you'd have to debug that test and you'd have to set breakpoints. We've been over this, right? The cool thing is you can configure your unit tests to run with IntelliTrace collection even if you're not debugging them. So whenever you run a unit test, it can record this whole execution history, which you can then review after the test has failed. And this works on a server as well, on a build server, on an integration server. You could have IntelliTrace collection whenever you run your unit tests. And we'll talk about the performance hit. It does make your tests a little slower, but it could be pretty worth it. So I'm just going to do the following. I have a test settings file over here, which I can use for running my tests. And under the data and diagnostics section, there is an IntelliTrace checkbox checked. And there's also some additional configuration you can apply, but for now I'm going to leave it with the defaults. And by the way, you can see that this window really wasn't built for the font sizes I've currently selected. So I'm just going to tell Visual Studio, please use this test settings file for running the tests. And then I'm going to run the test again. And this is going to take a little while longer with IntelliTrace enabled. And it's done. And this time, there is this little output link over here. Click that. We get an attachment. In addition to the test results, we get an attachment with the iTrace extension. And that's an IntelliTrace recording, which we can open. And again, the iTrace file could have come from a build server. We're opening that on our development box when we have the source code and Visual Studio installed. Let me just show you where that file really is. So if I go over to my Jack compiler project, test results, looking for now in the in folder, right down here, we have an IntelliTrace recording file. And I can drag it into Visual Studio. The only reason I'm not clicking this link is that it's configured to pop up a new Visual Studio instance by default. And I want to avoid that. So I'm just dragging this file in. Now, we get this nice IntelliTrace summary, which says, yes, sir, you've got some exceptions in your trace, as well as additional events, but let's focus on exceptions for now. There's three of them. We have a test failed exception, which does make sense, I guess. We have a target invocation exception, which no one really cares about. And we have a compilation exception, which is the thing we're looking for. So click that, we get the call stack, which we already know. Click debug, and again, a magical thing happens. The process isn't running anymore, but it is as if we are debugging it now. And on the right here, you can see the usual IntelliTrace events view. Right over here down the middle, you see a code map, which is totally unreadable, and I don't like code map very much, so I'm going to close this thing. And on the left, I get the exact point where that exception was thrown. How do we figure out which line it was thrown on? Tokenizer current line sounds promising. And indeed, if we had been debugging normally, we could have just hovered over this thing or look at the locals window and see the value. But it turns out there is no data. We don't know the current line because available data is shown in the locals window and it's not part of what's shown in the local window. So IntelliTrace did not collect the value for that tokenizer current line property. But not all is lost. We can switch over to a really nice window called IntelliTrace calls view. So right over here on the right, I can switch between calls view and events view. And the calls view is much more detailed. It gives me the whole execution history in terms of methods, which methods were called, what they took in as arguments, and what they returned. And so if I just go to the previous method right over here, tokenizer current line dot get, then we find ourselves inside the tokenizer class, which is just a couple of steps back in the execution history. And do you see the current line? I see the current line. Down here, the locals box, you see the current line was line 40. And so at this point, again, without debugging the test really, just by reviewing its execution history, we know we have a problem on line 40. If we go over to the source that was actually used here, down to line number 40, sorry, this one, down to line number 40, well, that's line 40, and it does have a semicolon, but line 39 does not. Incredible. Without debugging, really, we were able to figure out why that unit test was failing, just by looking at the execution history. And so I realized that not all of these three examples are relevant for your day-to-day work, but they illustrate situations in which you'd spend a lot of time debugging something, setting up for debugging, setting breakpoints, reviewing some source code, setting breakpoints again, when in some cases, just looking at the history of what the application was doing can give you the problem right away. And that's what IntelliTrace is good at. It's not always good, but when it is, it's incredible. That's what I'm trying to say. So let me just talk a little more theory before I can show you that we can collect IntelliTrace information in production environments as well, and not just on your development box or on your build server or something like that. So we have two modes for running IntelliTrace on development or in production, two modes that apply in both situations. They are called high mode and low mode. In low mode, we are only collecting runtime events, such as exceptions, breakpoints, debugger stops, debugger steps, file accesses, UI gestures, database transactions, database accesses. These things are logged, only those things, only events. In the high mode, we're collecting every method call. Every method that's called in your application, we're recording that to the trace. We're looking at the, we're putting that in the file, which we can later review. So obviously, there's going to be a slight difference in the performance impact, right? The low mode, where you only collect events, could have a negligible overhead, because you're only collecting maybe dozens of events per second, and that's something your application probably isn't going to notice at runtime. In high mode, we're collecting every method call, and so if you have a million method calls per second, which occasionally happens, you're going to see tenfold or a hundredfold slowdowns. And that's not quite as reasonable for production anyway. In development, you might be able to live with high mode turned on all the time when doing F5 debugging in Visual Studio. In production, if you're going to use IntelliTrace, you're probably going to use low mode and not high mode. But there are some hybrid scenarios, like maybe a QA environment. Your QA engineers might be running running integration tests or manual acceptance tests. If you record IntelliTrace when the QA engineer is working and running the tests, then when you get the bug report, it can say, this window didn't work. I clicked the button and it didn't work. That's one version of a bug report. The other version can say, I clicked the button, it didn't work, here's the IntelliTrace recording. And then you know exactly what didn't work. Maybe you don't know the root cause, but you know what they mean. You can see they clicked the button. You can see what happened in the app after they clicked the button. You can see database accesses, file accesses, threads being created and destroyed. So it can make a real difference, and in some situations, you want to use high mode, even though it hurts performance, because it gives you so much more detail. Essentially, you're getting a free log of everything going on in your application without a single code change. That's what IntelliTrace can give you. So, talking about events, you can have full control over what events exactly are being collected. Again, to reduce the performance impact even further. You can say, I only want database accesses to be logged. I only want file accesses. I only want UI gestures. Or you can pick and choose whatever you like. Every single event can be selected and unselected. And that's just in your Visual Studio options under IntelliTrace, IntelliTrace events. You can select exactly which gestures, which events are being collected. And this thing is called a collection plan. It says what is being collected, that's a collection plan. And you can add your own events, and I hope we'll have a couple of minutes left at the end of the talk to see how we can add our own events in addition to what IntelliTrace and the .NET framework provide. What exactly is collected anyway when IntelliTrace logs the information, logs the event or the method call information? So IntelliTrace collects method parameters, IntelliTrace collects method return values, which is why we were able to see what the tokenizer class returned from the current line property. IntelliTrace collects local variables, but only reference type local variables and not value types. And IntelliTrace collects some basic information for nested objects. So if you're returning a complex object, IntelliTrace will also record some of its fields, but not all. So in this example on the slide, the purple things, account, tweets, tweets at I, are being recorded. Count and I are not being recorded. That's how IntelliTrace works. And unfortunately, we do not have control over that. So we can't say, I do want local variables of reference of value types to be collected. No. This is how it works. The engine has this limitation. It's essentially a design decision to minimize the performance impact again. But this could be enough in many cases, as we've seen in the few demos I've shown. How do you collect these logs? Yes, sir. What is the reason that value types are not collected? I can only guess here because I have not been around when they implemented it, but I suspect it is more difficult to retrieve this information at runtime with the smaller performance overhead. The optimizations that JIT does can make it difficult to retrieve these values. On the other hand, reference type locals are always tracked by the GC, so the information of where they are is always there. In any case, how do you get these logs for analysis without Visual Studio? So, every time you hit a 5, and I know I said without Visual Studio, but we have to go through that first. Every time you hit a 5, Visual Studio saves the trace at the end of the debugging session to a folder which you can configure again as part of tools options. So, every time you do a debugging session and you shut down debugging, you can go back. You can see exactly what happened. You can see all your debugging steps. You can send that to a friend. So if you happen to stop debugging too early, you can still recall some of the information you were looking through while debugging. But that's not as interesting. So let's take a look at a few other ways to collect IntelliTrace data. One is the IntelliTrace standalone collector. This is a little zip file, essentially, that you download for free. And it comes with two ways of collecting IntelliTrace. One is an EXE, which I'll show you right now. It's a standalone EXE, which you can copy over to another machine, tell it which application to launch, which collection plan to use, where to put the recording after the trace is done, and just let it work. The other approach is commandlets, PowerShell commandlets. For ASP.NET applications and for SharePoint in particular, you can't really launch the EXE and tell IntelliTrace to sort of record it. So instead, you have a bunch of commandlets for attaching to a particular application pool, to a particular website, and recording everything that's going on inside that application pool or that website. And of course, the same way you have start IntelliTrace collection, you also have stop IntelliTrace collection, so you can record a limited segment of time. There are two other ways of getting IntelliTrace data. One is Microsoft Test Manager, MTM. And that's, again, very tailored for that QA scenario I've mentioned before. So your QA engineer is using MTM to run manual tests. You can have an IntelliTrace recording for each test they run. And you can get that submitted to TFS automatically with the bug report. That's quite a nice integration you can get there. If you're using some other configuration management system, still, you can get bugs from MTM with IntelliTrace reports attached. And finally, Azure, Microsoft Azure, can give you IntelliTrace information for what's happening in your cloud services. And we'll get to that a bit later. And this is probably one of the only reasonable ways to debug what's happening in a cloud service. So let's see an example of how we collect IntelliTrace information from the command line using standalone collection. Okay, so first we gotta take a look at the misbehaved application. I'm gonna run this thing without debugging. And this one is an app that's supposed to display conference speakers. And it's using an actual web service which returns a JSON file and then it parses it and stuff. So I click load, and then I get this beautiful error message. Now again, I hope you haven't coded one of those, but I bet you've seen one of those. It's totally useless. It's worse than useless. It says, oops, we encountered an unexpected error. The details are the given key was not present in the dictionary. And you're like, of course, I know what the issue is. The given key was not present in the dictionary. I can debug this thing now. And the worst part is that when I click OK, the application goes away, disappears. It does not throw an exception and fail with the default Windows error reporting stuff. It just closes down. So it shows this stupid dialogue, and then it bails out, exits normally. This makes it super difficult to debug automatically on a different machine. For example, you might be able to collect crash dumps if an application crashes in production. But this application did not crash. It displayed a nice message and exited gracefully, even though something obviously was wrong. And so this kind of error reporting, just as a side note, is very, very bad. It's much better to crash than to display this useless message and exit gracefully. And in any case, we don't know what went wrong. And we might be able to reproduce this on our own machine with F5, with live debugging, or we might not. So imagine for a second that we cannot. We cannot reproduce this. We have to get the end user to reproduce this thing for us on their own machine. And of course, we can't put Visual Studio on that user's machine. IntelliTrace to the rescue. So I'm going to the command line here, and I've got this little batch file, this little batch script, which I've built. It basically does the following. It deletes the existing log file, just in case I run it a few times, and then it uses the IntelliTrace standalone collector. Again, you can see I'm in my downloads folder. I've just taken a zip file, extracted it. I've got a folder full of files. IntelliTrace SC is the standalone collector exe. And then I give it a collection plan, which is, again, a description of which events I want to collect. And you have two collection plans ship with the IntelliTrace standalone collector. And later on, we'll see exactly what a collection plan entails. It takes a log file. And finally, it takes a launch parameter and the full path to my failing application. And so again, this is good for console apps, for desktop apps, for services even. If you have an ASP.NET application, a SharePoint application, you need to use the PowerShell commandlets, which don't require the exe file. But in our case, this is just going to be well and fine. I'm going to run this batch script, and it opens up the app right over here. And I'm going to click load, and it's going to fail with this useless, silly message box. And I'm going to click OK, and it exits. And again, no exceptions, no unhandled exceptions anyway. And so now, I'm just going to open that log file in Visual Studio. So where is it? Here it is, log iTrace. Open it up. And as you can see, there was a number of exceptions here. Many of them might look really unintelligible, like interpreter exception. And I do get the call stack, but it looks absolutely useless. If we go a little lower, here are the given key not present blah blah exceptions. And in fact, we have three of those key not found exceptions. And this is usually an indication that the application is catching and rethrowing the exception, Or maybe we really did have three exceptions happen in close proximity. Because if we look at the rightmost column, if we look at the rightmost column over here, we have the event times, and the event times for all of these exceptions are pretty much the same. So this is the first one, and you can see the stack on the bottom. This is the second one. This is the third one. Which should we be looking at? Let me do this again. Here's one. Here's two. Here's three. Which do you like the best? We can look at all three, but which do you like the best? One. Two. Three. Really? Okay, so you're saying three, you're saying one. Let's take a look at one. The call stack here looks like something out of this world. It's something with dispatcher wrapped invoke exception dispatch info throw async stuff. This guy over here has a slightly shorter call stack, but still, it's not really coming from my code, this thing. Task awaiter, throw for non-success, whatever. This one over here looks much closer to the actual issue. It's coming from the generic dictionary class, which is trying to retrieve an item, and then it's throwing an exception using a helper method. And this thing over here, mangled as it is a method in my own application, a method called getSpeakers, which happens to be an async method, so it's got this mangling around it. But in any case, this is the one that looks closest to the actual call site, to the actual throw point. But of course, again, we could have debugged the whole sequence. Let's click this one here. And after loading some symbols, we get the IntelliTrace view on the right again. We get the call, the code map, which I'm going to close. And we get the sources. So first of all, could this line conceivably throw a key not found exception? Could it? Yes. Yes, it could. It's really there. If speakers is a dictionary, then speakers at speaker name is trying to access a key in that dictionary, and it looks like that key does not exist. What's the next thing we care about? What is speaker name? And as usual, IntelliTrace has some challenges. The speaker name variable was not collected here, so we cannot see the speaker name. But if we recorded the full execution history, I can switch to the calls view on the right and just start working my way backwards to the point speaker name is initialized. Might be a little tricky, but we'll figure it out. Now, here's a useful trick. Instead of trying to navigate this horribly confusing screen, I can simply click this little button over here, set debugger context here, and then I can go back in time using these buttons. I can go forward using F10, I can step in using F11, or I can go backwards, that's the cool part, I can go backwards with Control-Shift F11. So let's go backwards. Control-Shift F11. We're at the previous line. Going backwards again, Control-Shift F11. We're at the speaker name line. This is where the speaker name was initialized. And it is a dynamic object which is used to initialize the speaker name, the session dynamic object. So it might be a little tricky to figure out exactly where the value is. But if we expand the locals over here, try convert, for example, we can see that the return value from this dynamic member access was TBD. And so to make a long story short, we actually have a session returned to us by the web service where the speaker is TBD, is to be determined. And our code doesn't handle it quite as well because we don't have a speaker named TBD in our speakers list, But we do have a session whose speaker is not assigned yet. And so our code is crashing with this really nasty exception. Now, of course, again, we might have been able to debug this if we were actually debugging, if we were placing breakpoints and inspecting variables. But in a production environment, when that's happening against the real web service, collecting this detailed level of information could be really, really tricky. And even if you get a crash dump, which in this case you would not, because there was no crash, there was a graceful exit. Even if you got a crash dump, it might not be immediately obvious what exactly is crashing, what the speaker name is. It's really tricky to get all this information. And so in this case, we collected IntelliTrace data from, let's say a production environment, because we didn't have Visual Studio to collect IntelliTrace. We used the standalone collector. And then we moved over to the development environment and opened up that IntelliTrace recording. So going back to the slides, just a couple of more scenarios left. One is using the cloud. When you're putting your application in Windows Azure, Microsoft Azure, when you're putting your application in Microsoft Azure, you can actually have remote debugging support. You can remote debug virtual machines, you can remote debug websites, you can remote debug cloud services. But remote debugging could be kind of an overkill, especially for production roles. You don't want a production website being remote debugged from Visual Studio, breakpoints, stepping into methods while clients are accessing that website. So the next best thing to remote debugging, I think, is IntelliTrace. It's better than just logs because it gives you the whole execution history and interesting events that occur in your application. And you can use IntelliTrace today with Azure Cloud Services. It's not supported with websites yet, might never be supported, but I hope it will be. It is supported with cloud services. So if you have worker roles or web roles deployed to Azure as cloud services, you can check this little checkbox in the publish settings called Enable IntelliTrace, and you can configure, again, which events you care about, and if you want low mode, which is just events, or high mode, which is events and every method call, and then you publish your cloud service with these settings. Once you've done that, you can go to Visual Studio. Let me show you that real quick. You can go to Visual Studio to the lovely Azure node in Server Explorer, find your cloud service, find the deployment, find the role, and find the instance of that role, and then you can right-click View IntelliTrace Logs. This was introduced a few months ago. It was also obviously possible before, but now it's integrated into Visual Studio. So you can just find your production instance, right-click View IntelliTrace Logs, and it starts a process which downloads all the IntelliTrace data that was collected to your machine. I'm not going to do it right now, and we're kind of short on time, and I'd like to allow some time for questions. But essentially, you can enable IntelliTrace in your role, you can let it run and collect information, and then you can download these traces from the cloud and open them in your development environment. And Visual Studio takes care of packaging the file up, downloading it, opening it, the whole logistics here. So that's IntelliTrace support in Azure. The last thing I want to show you, and that's pretty cool, is customizing IntelliTrace, adding your own events. Now, if you're using high mode, you don't need this. If you're using high mode, every single method call is being collected. If you're using low mode, only interesting events are being collected. But interesting for whom? Interesting for whoever designed the collection plan. And so you've got events for ADO.NET, you've got events for ASP.NET, you've got events for UI gestures in WPF, and you've got events for thread pool work items. But you don't have events for your stuff, for your business logic. But you can have events for your stuff. You can have events for your business logic. You can pick any method you want in your code, any method, and turn that method call into an event. Whenever a particular method in your application is called, IntelliTrace can emit an event. And so an example of this, and I'll show you a full example shortly, an example of this here in the slide uses the gcCollect method. It's probably a bad idea to call gcCollect in your own application. We're not going to focus on that right now. And so you might want to get a little log message whenever you do happen to call gcCollect. So you can add to the collection plan a little piece of XML that says whenever gcCollect is being called, log an IntelliTrace event, which I can later analyze and see exactly where it came from because I get a full call stack for each event. So let me show you a full example. In my folder over here, I have a collection plan. This is, again, an XML file, which I only slightly modified from the collection plan that ships with the IntelliTrace standalone collector. And this thing is documented, so don't worry about what you're going to see. There is good, decent documentation on MSDN showing how to build this kind of IntelliTrace events yourself. So I'm just going to drag that collection plan over to Visual Studio. And we can review this huge pile, steaming pile of XML. Checkpoint options aren't particularly interesting. Trace instrumentation over here says which assemblies you want to instrument and which assemblies you do not want to instrument. Basically, if you have a bunch of modules that you don't care about, you can have IntelliTrace skip them, which improves performance. You can do the same for processes. And then down here, we have diagnostic event specifications. Each diagnostic event specification node describes an IntelliTrace event. So the one I have here is for a method in the Jack compiler project called Jack compiler parser parse expression. So the full method name with the signature and return value is part of the event specification. Whenever the method is called, an event is going to be part of the trace. But you can add additional information. And that's what I'm doing right here. I'm adding three additional pieces of data, which is the current class, which comes from a field. It's all the way down here. It comes from a field called current sub dot class name k backing field. It's an auto-generated property, so the field name is pretty ugly. I've got another one, which is called line number, and this one is prettier. It's just tokenizer.currentLine, and there's also one in the middle for some other info, for the method name. So essentially, I can tell IntelliTrace, this method is interesting for me. Whenever it's called, write down to the log that this method was called and add some additional fields that are retrieved at runtime. And they are retrieved pretty efficiently. It's not like reflection is used. IntelliTrace injects code into your process, which does this instrumentation and data collection. And only methods that you care about, you describe in that way. Only when those methods are called, you pay an actual performance penalty. So you can add events like this, however many you want. If we look down, you'll see event specifications. Sorry for giving you a headache. You'll see event specifications for a bunch of existing stuff. So for example, you've got the method here, Windows Forms checkbox on check state changed. It's just another event. It's just another specification like ours. Whenever that method is called, you can have IntelliTrace emit an event. And so that's the infrastructure. Events are just methods, specific methods with specific information that's being recorded. Now, how do you use one of those collection plans? You can do it from the standalone collector. So let me show you a very quick example of this. I can use the standalone collector with this collection plan of mine, which is in ctemp IntelliTrace for collectionplan.xml. And then the log file is going to be ctemp IntelliTrace custom events.itrace. And I'm going to have it launch the Jack compiler. So ctemp IntelliTrace, one cjack compiler, jack compiler console, bin debug, jack compiler console.exe. Sorry for the huge command line. Now, if I open up that particular trace file over here, this is an IntelliTrace summary, which looks a little different because it doesn't have exceptions in it. No exceptions. Everything went well. But down here, we've got a threads list. And then for each thread, we can see all the IntelliTrace events that were collected. You can see those on a thread-by-thread basis, unfortunately. So guessing that this is the main thread, I start debugging. And then I switch to the IntelliTrace events view, and you can see a bunch of our custom events. All of those are custom events, and if I click an event, you can see a detailed description. An expression was parsed in main.main, line number 44. And if I go to the locals window, if I go to the locals window down here and expand, then you can see the additional details which I put down in my XML. So it's recording the class name, the method name, and the line number with nice, beautiful names and values which were retrieved at runtime when the IntelliTrace session was running. And this is crazy. You can add a log to your application without changing the source code. You write yourself a little XML file, and then you run IntelliTrace on that XML file, and you get a detailed log with custom log messages, no code modifications required. This can really help debugging. This can also occasionally be useful for performance tips as well. For example, you could have a collection plan with a bunch of events warning you of potential performance issues, such as calling GC collect or allocating huge objects or a bunch of other bad patterns. So you could use IntelliTrace to get these nice detailed reports of what you think you've done wrong in terms of performance in your application. The potential really is huge, both for live debugging, which were the first couple of things we've seen, as well as for production, QA, sort of out of Visual Studio experiences. So we have a little time left, which I'd like to use for questions. So let me just wrap up, and then I'll be happy to take any questions you have. You can use IntelliTrace, like we've seen, as a live debugging companion. You can have it turned on by default. Actually, it is turned on whenever you debug in Visual Studio. If it's not turned on for you, go to Tools Options IntelliTrace, enable that. You'll probably use it occasionally. I use it really frequently because I'm aware of the feature's existence. You might use it only occasionally, but when you use it, it could be gold. You can also use IntelliTrace in production with the standalone collector. You can use it with the test manager for tests your QA engineers are executing. And you can use it with the Azure Cloud Services environment as well. And hopefully in the future with additional features in Azure. And finally, you can extend IntelliTrace with your own events. And we've seen a little example of that. No particular debugging scenario around it, but it can be really useful for both logging and perhaps performance investigations as well. Now, I have to remind you that after the session, we have the Ask the Experts thing. So let me just put up that slide right over here. We have the Ask the Experts event at Hall 5. And one last request before you leave. I would really, really, really appreciate that you submit the sessions evaluation, the session evaluations for this talk. Thank you very much for staying, but please do this one additional thing and submit your evaluation. It's really important for both myself and, of course, the conference as well to know if this was relevant and interesting for you. So we have about 10 minutes for questions. And in any case, thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy tomorrow as well. Thank you. Okay, so any questions, please just go ahead and ask. And I'm going to put up my contact details over here in case you'd like to stay in touch. Yes. What about what? IntelliTrace, so the question is, what about compilation with IntelliTrace and code analysis? IntelliTrace is a runtime mechanism. It does not affect compilation. So you can use, what's that? You can, yeah, sure, you can use both. So you can do static code analysis during compile time, and at runtime, you can enable IntelliTrace. They are totally independent. Okay, so are there some additional tools by Microsoft that generate or consume IntelliTrace information? There is a tool called Microsoft Monitoring Agent, which I haven't covered because I feel it's being moved away from, which can collect information from a production environment. It sort of runs alongside your application, unlike the standalone collector. It just runs in the background and collects an interesting events. This is probably being phased out, but that's one tool that's one possible use of IntelliTrace, really. You could have an agent running on the system collecting interesting events for later analysis. On the analysis side, it's just Visual Studio for now, but there is an open and documented SDK. There is an assembly called Microsoft.IntelliTrace, which you can integrate into your own application and read IntelliTrace logs. So theoretically, you can build your own IntelliTrace viewer, which doesn't require Visual Studio. Or you can do some automatic analysis of IntelliTrace logs. Was that? Before what? Oh, why is that related? Yeah, well, again, IntelliTrace is a runtime feature. So whatever runs, that's what's being instrumented and recorded. Whatever final exe you're building, that's the thing that IntelliTrace will use. It does not require any compilation steps. It does not change your assembly before runtime. It only injects stuff into the process at runtime. Yes, sir? Questions about the standalone collector? Yes. Okay, so the first question is, do you need debug symbols, PDBs, to analyze IntelliTrace logs? You need debug symbols if you want to see source code, because debug symbols within .NET code contain information about source file names and line numbers. So, what's that? Oh, during collection? No. During collection, you do not need symbols because method names are available as part of .NET metadata. Well, if you're using obfuscation, then obviously the collection plan will have to contain the obfuscated method names, but in any case, you do not need symbols in collection. The second question. Well, so the question is, do you need any special privileges to run the standalone collector? To collect information from ASP.NET application pools and such, you do need permissions. I believe admin would work, but possibly some lower permissions or lesser permissions as well. For an exe, you don't need any special privileges. It does not require admin. Yes. Yes. So the question is, does it support attach without stopping the process and restarting it? And unfortunately, the answer is it does not. It does require a restart. It does require, IntelliTrace, the infrastructure needs to be present when the process is started. Hopefully, in the future, this restriction will be lifted, because there is no very good reason for that to be. For instance, you can have a profiler attached to a process mid-run. And that's something that wasn't possible in the past, and it is possible today. And IntelliTrace is pretty similar to a profiler. So I hope maybe at some point it will be possible. Today, you need to restart the process to collect IntelliTrace. Yes?
Is it possible to, in the collection plan, to specify like a wild class, like namespaces? Or do you have
to? Is it possible in a collection plan to specify a whole namespace, a whole class? It is not. It is a method by method basis, as far as I know. The reason is really that it adds a lot of overhead. The more methods you have, the more events you have, you're adding overhead. If you're interested in a whole class, a whole namespace, maybe a whole assembly, then you can use high mode, which collects every method call, and simply restrict the assemblies you want to record, you want to instrument. Have a collection plan that uses high mode, but only on one assembly or one namespace. That could be a reasonable solution. Yes? So the question is it possible to run it on a Windows service? Again, IntelliTrace, the standalone collector, needs to launch the EXE. If you have a Windows service that can also function as a, if you just double-click the EXE, yes. If it has to be started as a service, then no. But I mean, in many cases, it's really easy to take a service and turn it into a console application that you can also start with a double click. But there is nothing specific for Windows services, which there is for ASP.NET, but not for Windows services. You can do what? What's that? Oh, okay. So you're saying that you could configure it such that whenever you start the service from the service command thing, it would run IntelliTrace and then run the service exe. Yeah, it probably might be possible. Yeah. Although it would run in session zero, I don't see a reason why it wouldn't work. But yes. What is the what? The file, okay, so what is the format of the files? The files are in a proprietary format, binary, you cannot read them. As I said, there is an API. There is a Microsoft assembly, which is up on MSDN and documented, which you can use to parse the files. But the format itself is proprietary. Yes? Right, so the question is, can you use it with Windows RT apps? You can use it with Windows Store apps if you F5. If the app is standalone and you want to attach IntelliTrace, I believe it is not currently supported. How are we on time? 2 minutes. Okay. Yes. I think this this gentleman raised his hand first. Yes. For what? For cloud service?
Yes, cloud service.
Yeah. No. You need. Well, you just need to update that particular bit, but yes. Currently, yes, you need to, so the question was, for cloud services, do you need to republish, or can you just sort of attach IntelliTrace down in the middle? And yeah, the answer is that right now you have to republish with IntelliTrace enabled before you use IntelliTrace. Yes. What's that?
Xamarin.
Yes, Xamarin. Yeah. No. Uh-huh.
So, if I
Right. So, and this is a more general question, really. What kinds of things are supported by IntelliTrace, what kinds of targets in general. IntelliTrace supports the desktop CLR. And so you can use it with console apps, WPF apps, Windows services that run .NET, ASP.NET, Windows Store applications, because they also use the desktop CLR. You cannot use it with Silverlight. You cannot use it with Mono, so the Xamarin runtime. You cannot use it with Windows Phone, actually. So you can only use it with the desktop CLR for now. And it's kind of a huge effort to port IntelliTrace to a different runtime. So they're not doing it right now. Yes, last question, I believe. Is there what? Oh yeah, sure. This is what you're doing when you're doing F5. By default? Oh, gotcha. Yeah, so the question is, if you run a process in production with IntelliTrace enabled, can you stop it and resume it? No, you cannot. It's running with IntelliTrace from the moment it started until it is terminated. Currently, that's the way it is. Okay, so we're out of time, but you're very welcome to come forward and ask some more questions. You can also see me at the Ask the Experts hall. So again, thanks a lot, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank